Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Wade Wegner.
And my name is Wenming Yi.
Excellent. So we've got an exciting show today. Wenming has joined us for today's show. I think we've mentioned him on the show a number of times. But real quick, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, first of all, my name is Wenming Yi. I work for the Windows Azure Technical Evangelism team. And basically, Wade, the Superman, the guy in the Superman suit, is my boss. So I have been... past 3 or 4 years, been working on Windows HPC, the product line, and mostly working with the community, making sure that the numerical solvers and also parallel computing simulation codes work really well on our platform. So that's what I've been doing the past 3 years. And about 6 months ago, I transferred over to the Azure Evangelism team.
Windows Azure Evangelism.
Yeah, and this is a great way for me to amplify the work that I've done on HPC and with, you know, the ability to collaborate with, you know, a lot more people when you move some of these applications onto Azure.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think you've been building a set of training kits for HPC for a while. Very similar to the Windows Azure Platform training kit, but focused on HPC workloads and Windows HPC. And you've done a lot of recent work to take many of those labs and those demos and start leveraging things up in Windows Azure as well.
Yeah, and some of these labs will be available very soon on the Windows Azure platform. If you actually go on MSDN and go to Learning Center, and you will see there's a separate training course for Windows HPC with Azure Burst. And we had a lot of customers using that to build very real applications from mining to all the way to you know, running simulations on airplanes or, you know, race cars. And
that's cool.
We actually have a cool demo today to show how to do that.
Excellent. So we'll get to that with the feature.
Yeah.
But first, as always, let's start with the news.
There we go.
Right. The Connect
Monitor.
Go off real quick. I never tried to say this. Connectonitor. Connectonitor.
Tonitor.
Connectonitor. Connectonitor. There we go. We got it. Okay. It only took a few tries. Connectonitor. Well, even though it's hard to say, it's actually it's a pretty cool solution put together by Brady Gaster. So what's pretty exciting is Brady Gaster has recently announced on his blog as well that he's going to be joining our team. He's going to be a technical evangelist on the Windows Azure platform evangelism team. So that's cool. He'll be joining us in a few weeks. In the meantime, he's been playing around with some pretty cool technology and has put together an interesting solution. So he's taken a Connect, and you can see here through the architecture, basically, whenever someone is walking through the room and the Connect detects a skeletal framework so that there's someone in the room, it will periodically take a picture. The software takes that picture, and it throws a message down into the service bus and essentially puts an item on the queue there that then... an MVC application grabs out of the queue and then uses SignalR to send a notification, basically, and handle the fact that the image was received and to send it to a web page. So the net effect is you can open up a web page, and the web page will update itself periodically with an image from the Connect whenever someone comes on screen. And so it's a neat look at piecing together all these different technologies and coming up with a pretty compelling, I think, solution. So,
what about just having a webcam versus the Connect?
Well, I think the Connect's fun because he's using the Connect SDK to detect when a person comes onto the screen. The fact that as soon as it detects a skeletal framework.
Oh, okay, got it.
I should actually dig into it a little bit more. I don't think it's just anything that's moving. I think it's really as soon as the Connect software and the SDK detects that it's a person that's come on screen, then it'll start taking pictures.
So. I have a great idea. Whenever he joins our team in the next 2-3 weeks, we can ask him to do a demo for us.
I think that'll be great. So, absolutely. Yeah. We'll have to do that.
So, are we moving on to the next
Let's go to the next. Let's go to the next item. So, recently, the Patterns and Practices team has announced that they've taken two things that they've been working on for a while, codenamed Wasabi and codenamed Topaz, and basically turned them into application blocks that they're now releasing. So, codename Wasabi is a application block used for autoscale within the platform. And I think Grigori has actually had this released quite for quite a while up on code.msdn.com or whatever that resource is. But the Patterns and Practices team has taken this and extended it quite a bit. And so with Wasabi or with this application block for Autoscale, you can do a number of different things. So you can monitor queue, and as that queue, you know, things stack up in the queue, you can take an action like, you know, scale out and spin up a couple new worker roles to help manage, you know, things backing up in the queue. Yep. You can look at performance counters and indicators and, you know, make decisions as to how to scale up or rather scale out and scale back. But it's a nice application block that you can use within your application to handle autoscale.
It's really just a great way of utilizing the elasticity of the cloud.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then the last one, if you scroll down a little bit, this Topaz is really a application block that you can leverage to handle transient faults within Windows Azure. So this is, it could be SQL Azure and dealing with retry logic or whatever it might be where, because it's in a cloud, because it's a distributed system, you're plugging into a lot of different resources and services, there may be times where you need to handle some sort of a, you know, short-term temporary fault. And so this application block helps to alleviate some of those issues.
So really addressing two very important points in the cloud. One is elasticity for dynamic scaling and also fault tolerance.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so definitely take a look at this. We're going to try to get Grigori and maybe someone from his team onto the show at some point in the future, and we'll go really deep into it. But for now, take a look at the resources. There's quite a bit out there. So this is pretty cool. So with the Windows Azure Marketplace, they've announced now a self-service publishing for data sets. So in the past, it was, you know, you had to work with the data market team and, you know, hand off your data sets to the platform, and it took a little time. Now it's self-service, so you can take your data set and basically get onboarded into the data market pretty easily.
I'm starting to think that I need to upload some of my weather simulation data.
Yeah, there you go.
So people can play it back. That would be a perfect place.
In fact, I think I've alluded onto the show that you can predict the weather more accurately than NASA.
Well, that's questionable, but maybe I just got lucky. But I can definitely show a demo of that coming up, running a weather simulation on Azure across hundreds of cities.
I think that's a great transition. So from moving from data sets here from the marketplace to talking about HPC,
because absolutely.
You know, and tell us a little bit more about it. But from what I understand, I mean, HPC is really a platform for, you know, doing massive workloads and massive compute.
So. That's right. So HPC is nothing new and has been around for, I wouldn't say hundreds of years, but at least the last hundreds of years of some computing time. So it's been around since 1950s and 60s. So the idea is to be able to solve large time space complexity problems. And it's really not just a buzzword. It's just simply saying that either you would require a lot of CPU time to run something, or you could also use a lot of memory or disk space. Yep. So that's the time space complexity. So it's mostly used for simulating a physical phenomenon. So you're using these very sophisticated linear algebra libraries that's been fine-tuned by many people over 30 or 40 years. This is an industry that has really matured. So the idea is to be extremely efficient at taking a very large problem, distribute it across a cluster, and be able to do that. So the last 20 years, we've gone through having supercomputers that are, you know, vector-based machines that are extremely expensive, to more of a commodity offering, which is, you know, boxes that are made out of PC boards, simply Intel. And what happened is Intel and AMD really have driven that industry into using these cheaper hardware. But at the same time, they're not as good as having one single large machine. But what people did over the last 5-10 years, they've really optimized and improved that. So that revolution is about to happen again when you go to a commodity hardware that is publicly hosted, which you can simply go out and say, I want a number of machines, instead of having to still plan and buy lots of machines and put in your data center.
Yep.
And we have three Cray sitting right here in the data center.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, not everyone is as fortunate as you to have, first of all, a Cray, right?
And I have three of them.
And you have three Crays. And then, in many cases, too, not everyone has access to a large number of even commodity servers with which to distribute this work. And so that next revolution you're talking about is really now leveraging, you know, cloud and this ability to elastically scale in the cloud to start doing these workloads.
Yeah, and there's one note that I want to point out is that for the last 5-10 years, the optimization that was done on supercomputing on commodity hardware is really the the networking. Mm-hmm. So in order to solve these really large matrices, that is, you know, basically the basic math for solving physical phenomena simulation on the on computer systems. So the idea is to have extremely fast interconnects. Mm. So interconnects are InfiniBand 10 gig E. So these interconnects have a latency of a few microseconds, one or two microseconds, and then the bandwidth of 100 gigabps, you know, be able to transfer a DVD in a fraction of a second.
Interesting. Wow.
So that's the kind of hardware that people put in.
And so the networking component, is that crucial for coordination across these, you know, different you know, across nodes within the cluster then?
Right, because you're taking parts of matrices and distributing across network. Yep. But there are other people that are using supercomputing for other type of applications that are, you know, less chatty. So if your application is chatty in a traditional HPC sense, then it probably won't work so well on the cloud. But if you have stuff that are embarrassingly parallel, which each unit of work is well defined, for example, Pixar renders a lot of movies, and it takes hours and hundreds of machines to do. So each frame is a well-defined unit of work. They don't need to talk to each other. So if I render, you know, a million frames, I don't need to necessarily, you know, render them in sequence.
Right.
So I can
do
just
them
say,
all in parallel.
Do all of them in parallel. Give it back to me, and when you're done. So this type of work is very good for cloud.
Cool. So great background. That helps a lot. So I know you've got some demos and stuff to show us. So why don't you show us what you got?
Sure. So first of all, the HPC product has had a transition phase where they're taking this mode called the burst mode. Mm. What you can do is you can go into the HPC cluster management tool, which manages Windows 7 boxes and server boxes, and you can simply right-click and say, I want to add some Azure nodes. Mm. And then you can just burst to Azure, and it's very transparent to you. There's no code to write. It's simply, you know, run your stuff. Yep. So I have a demo on that today. And let me try to connect. So this is the infamous Cray that I was talking about. So this box has 8 nodes, and each of them has 8 cores. And they're relatively old. They're actually
similar. 8 nodes, and each node has 8 cores.
Yeah,
so that's 64 cores available.
Yeah, plus 16 gigabytes of RAM.
Wow.
So just out of coincidence, they are very much identical in terms of performance and number of, you know, processors and memory, like the cloud nodes.
Interesting.
So it's very similar.
Interesting.
So I used to have this in my office, and it was putting out, it was,
pretty
it had a silencer, actually.
Oh, okay.
It had a little noise canceling tool, but it didn't really quite work all that well, because when I'm actually running stuff, the temperature would go up, and then it would just be like an, you know, airplane taking off, and the neighbors were a little annoyed.
I'm sure they would be.
And since we're neighbors now, I could do that as a
April 4th. This is why it's nice we can burst to the
exactly.
cloud.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you can burst to the cloud. And the cool thing about this is that I'm actually running a simulation, running like 10 of these simulations. So these are already, you know, finished running, and I can close them out and rerun them. And the simplest way to do this is just run a bat file, which I'm going to submit 10 jobs through the job submission system, which is a batch system. It's nothing, you know, new. This thing has been around for many, many years. If we just take a little look at what it's doing, my one line is basically saying submit, you know, 10 of these. So the use scenario for this is that if you have a department where you have 10 students or 10 professors want to submit a job, or 10 engineers in some cases, you can simply do a submission, say job submit, send that through the system.
Yep.
And as you can see that...
I can see right there it says burst to Azure job
exactly.
state queued.
Yep. Yeah, so there's our job management tool, which is, you know, has the ability to manage clusters and Azure nodes. As you can see, this is a great way to utilize your Azure hours without writing much code at all. So if I want to add nodes, I can say add nodes, and it will go through, and you can add, you know, Windows nodes and compute nodes. And this is part
cool.
of the release for the SP3.
Yeah.
So
real quick, so release for SP3, which release is this? So this audience is probably familiar with the, you know, release cadence for like the Windows Azure SDK 1.6, which was, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Is that tied to this release schedule?
It is.
Okay.
So It's a little bit complicated. So let me just kind of start from the beginning. So when we had our first version of Windows HPC Server, it was using Server 2003. And then we had version 2, which is Server 2008.
Okay.
And version 3, that's for SP2. R2.
Okay, R2.
And when we released, this is the SP3 of R2, which means this burst option runs on R2.
I see. And so it would be Windows HPC Server 2008 R2 SP3.
Yeah,
that
you
gives
got
you
it.
The burst to Windows Azure.
Exactly.
Oof. We know how to name things, don't we?
We sure do. At the same time, we have taken the scheduling component out of the HPC and put that on Azure.
Right.
So that is part of the Azure SDK 1.6.
1.6, yeah.
So in order for you to run everything on Azure or use this on-premise stuff, you don't need it.
Right.
But if you are using the Azure component, 1.6 and the Azure HPC Scheduler SDK is all you need.
And let's clarify too. So the scheduler component, that's the core thing that's really scheduling and coordinating the work across all these nodes, right?
It's a batch submission system, essentially.
Yep.
So what you're doing
We need that running in Windows Azure to, if you want to do the entire workload up in Windows Azure.
That's right. And what's interesting about this is that a lot of people are very much familiar with, the batch system for supercomputing. So it's a way of taking, allowing old HPC users to be able to use Windows Azure without actually writing any .NET code.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of a mutually exclusive set of folks. They're on Fortran and C++, and while we are, moving ahead onto managed code and better APIs, but just getting them over onto our platform and be able to run stuff right away is without much programming is a very good way of utilizing Azure hours and also helping them to be able to burst into Azure when they don't have enough local resources.
Yeah, that's good.
And also running everything on Azure.
So there's a lot of different options and
ways
to go about doing.
So as you can see, I'm going to cancel this. I don't need to add more nodes. So I submitted 10 simulations.
Yep.
So each of them took one core, and I have these four core machines.
Yep.
So you're saying that if you do the math right, so these are four cores. There's using 50% of the CPU here on eight of them. So we have total of 10 simulations running. So if you look at the job submission console, you'll see that these simulations are running.
Cool.
So it will take a few seconds for it to do the plotting because we're RDP'd
and
into another machine, right?
Yeah.
So I have 10 very intensive graphics user interface running. So what we actually simulated here is actually the Cyclone model. So all your Dyson vacuums are built in using this physical model.
Hmm.
So if I can run hundreds of them to optimize the best design, we can either save a lot of money and also be able to make a better product.
Yeah.
And that's less likely to fail.
Cool.
So that's where a lot of the HPC workload comes in. So in reality, there's almost 30 to 40% of cloud computing workload is actually using technical compute workload, meaning that your work is compute intensive.
Yep. Yep.
And that's why you need the scaling up and down.
Yep. Cool.
So there you go. There's our simulation running as it's retrieving back information. The next piece I want to show you is the everything running on Azure.
Right. Because in this scenario, you've got the scheduler component running with Windows HPC server. You're bursting to Windows Azure.
That's right. And what we actually have running here is, just doing a job submit. There's no programming required.
Right.
There's no API that you have to do. I want to clarify some concepts here. So first thing is that when you have a cluster, you need a head node, which controls the worker nodes. The worker nodes communicate to the head node telling it, hey, what have we done lately?
Mm.
And in the back end, there's a database. So the database keeps track of your jobs, keeps track of your users, who submitted them, the statistics, how long things took to run.
Gotcha.
It's very complicated in the back end. So that back end is, instead of running locally on SQL Azure, it runs on SQL Azure.
Yep.
So when we do a deployment, here's how it works. So you use Visual Studio. In fact, I have it running here, Visual Studio running here. So, and if I, you know, click on my include the deployment project and, you know, fix a few parameters, I would be presented with this little helper thing. Mm. So the first thing you do is you enter your subscription.
Yep.
And the next thing you do is get your certificates, just the normal stuff. Yep. And then finally, you know, select a URL for where your portal needs to be. And your admin and how many nodes you need.
Yep.
Boom. You have a cluster.
And so, stepping back a little, so as part of this, now there's an HPC CSPKG file, right? So it's a pre-compiled package that has all the HPC scheduler, nodes, et cetera.
Yep.
And with this tool, basically it's just a different publishing mechanism, but that it has some additional metadata so that in the CFCFG file, you can specify, I've got one head node, I'm going to have five compute, one web front end, and then that's, I'm assuming, updating the CFCFG so that when Windows Azure gets the package and the configuration file, it knows essentially what you need, what it needs to deploy for you.
That's right. In fact, I'm pointing out to these two files right there. So these two files are where you change things.
Yep.
And you know, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into them, but they basically specify how large your instances are. Large, small, medium, and then how many of them.
Yep.
So essentially, you're modifying those two configuration files. So here, if I click config, it will install the certificate for you, manage my certificate, and then it will do the deployment. So typically, it takes between 15 minutes to an hour, depending on where you deploy it, when you deploy it, and how big the cluster is.
Yep.
So, and you can attach your applications with it. So here, I could say, I want to include this in the project. But for those of us who, you know, simply want to run it, we probably don't, you know, care so much about this part. We want to just go to the portal run something.
Yeah, there could be someone that has already deployed out and a bunch of, you know, nodes and so forth. And so, from your perspective, then you're really just going to focus on, you know, what is the job that I'm going to submit to the resources running in Windows Azure.
Right. So let's actually take a look at a deployed portal that I have. So here's a little portal that I deployed. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to run a job that takes a bunch of images that are in the RenderMan format.
Okay.
And since it's an embarrassingly parallel problem, it works great on Azure.
Yep.
So you take each frame, render it, and make a movie out of it. So let's play the movie first so that we all know it's high definition. Now we have lots of windows open there. So here's a movie that I pre-rendered that's, you know, got a few hundred frames, actually, 400 frames or so. And this is essentially a simulation that we ran of the software that we did, which is the OpenFOAM computational fluid dynamics code. When we hit a record button on that UI that you saw earlier, it would generate a bunch of RenderMan formats, and that format will, you know, be saved as a zip file. Zip them up and then upload those to Azure. And once I'm done with that, I can, you know, go ahead and render the movie and share it out on Azure.
Cool.
So let's look at the very basics so that people understand how things work. So the nice thing about the HPC solution is that there's absolutely no, you know, there are no requirements for programming. So if you're a, you know, old school Fortran guy, you can still use this. So here it is. There's a job that just finished, right? So if I want a new job, the first thing that we can do is that, you know, we can look at all jobs and, you know, the jobs that belongs to you versus other users. And you can create a new one, and you can have your favorite ones, and you can change submission pages. Submission pages are really cool because they allow you to do templates. So the idea of a template is that you have a very complex job that you want to submit, and the complex job has, you know, different parameters that you want to set and all kinds of information that you want to contain in there. All I am doing is taking a job and, you know, submitting it for 40 different frames. Mm-hmm. So in a job, I submit for something called a parametric sweep. And the job goes from render image from 0 to 39. You know, we have 40 frames. I like 0 better. So there you go. So I actually clicked on a job that I just finished, which is very, very much allows you to look at the details of what the job is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it finished 40 frames, and you can look at the job details. And you can look at the task details. So jobs are a, you know, larger unit, and you can, so, you know, you can auto calculate. You can do the scaling yourself. You can do you know, when do you want to run it? How long do you want to run it? There's a lot of parameters that you can set.
Yep.
So it's really an enterprise grade resource management tool across the clusters. Yep. Now we're making that available for the cloud.
And so most of this metadata is what you described as being stored in SQL Azure.
That's correct. This is
just basically the stuff tracking all the compute that's gone on.
Yeah. So let's look at just one frame. How does it work? So when I submitted a job, it said render frame 1 through 40, and that's pretty out of magic. But let's actually look at a finished one. I want to click on the first one and have you actually look at what's going on that particular job. As you can see, that the first thing I did is set a bunch of parameters and also set some environment variables. And the next thing is that I am going to, the most important part actually is the part where we actually do the rendering.
Hmm. So this, just to be clear, so this is a script then that you've submitted as part of this, and then when it basically schedules this stuff out and coordinates it, it's running this script. It's going to point to a certain frame, grab that information in, and do some sort of
running. So as you can see, I'm actually simply downloading the input file. So this is the more important part of the script, which is I'm downloading a copy of the input frame, which is in a zip file. The next thing you know, it would be unzipping it, right? So.
Yep.
So I'm going to unzip that. So WinR, unzip it.
RAR.
Very easy. Yep. And the next part is that we actually render it. So this is the software that we're actually doing the rendering. Yep. So you can see it's doing 1%, 2%, 3%.
Yep.
So that's kind of where... How this works.
Well, it's interesting. It's actually useful to see this because I think in my head now I've got a model for what's happening, and it's just that the scheduler is really just telling each of the nodes to run some sort of script and do something. And what it does is really just based on a script that you've written and you've defined that may grab resources from, in this case, blob storage, run some utility or executable with those resources and produce something, do something with it, and move on.
Yeah, and we also have three different programming models. One is using a WCF scale out farm. What that means is that you can have one proxy, which you make WCF requests to, which are compute intensive, and it will just scale it out up and down for you with different type of complex scenarios like fire and forget. You can just run it, and it will store everything in a local storage and queue things up for you, and do some of that. And also the second one is the traditional MPI, or the message passing library, where I talked about the fast interconnects, where you really need that bandwidth.
Yeah, you need that network.
But it's very brittle. It's for traditional HPC applications. And the third one is simply running stuff in parametric sweep fashion, which is very popular for the cloud because, if I had designs that I need to do that are, hundreds and hundreds of designs to find the best one, there are mathematical formulas that allows you to pick the best ones to try given amount of resources you have. Mm-hmm. So if I want to do 1,000 trials, what are the best numbers that I would do? So you use a statistic distribution called the Latin hypercube to figure out which ones we want, which are the numbers we want, and vary by several different parameters and still be able to do the best.
Yep.
So using statistics and mathematics, you can do very well with parameter suite. And in fact, that's what a lot of these large companies are starting to do and be able to do a lot of savings. So for example, we actually had a company that did parameter suite for the Ford company. Mm. And they were able to, in 2 days, figure out, 3 to 5% optimization versus engineers running around and got 0.5%, tens and twenties or maybe hundreds of engineers. So those are that's the power of being able to use the cloud.
It's nice.
And here is actually a look at what it looks like inside the Azure Management Console. As you can see, I have 4 nodes here. Is that 5?
You've got your hosted
your
hosted service, and then you've got a couple of different 3 different instances, so 3 different roles in there, or excuse me, 3 different roles, and then number of instances for each of those.
Exactly, so, and they have a front end which hosts the portal.
Yeah, that portal.
Yeah. So that's where the portal is, and the head node, computes all a lot of information. And the software we're actually using is Aquis, AQUIS, which is free and LGPL, I think. So we actually have a lot of that in a training kit that's coming up. You can render your own movie, and you can even play it back using a notification when it finishes on your Windows Phone 7.
Cool.
So a lot of that is going to be available in the next few days when we release our training kit.
Yep. That's exciting. Cool. Well, we'll make sure to cover that again next week and point people to those resources. So.
Yeah, great.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Well,
so,
thanks, Wade.
Yeah, so I guess you've not been a guest on the show before, so you may or may not know what's coming, but it's the magical part of the show. It's okay. The moment before the tip of the week where our editor, Bob, comes up with an introduction to the tip of the week. So I think
right.
We saw a lot of cool, you know, videos, kind of, modeling. We saw, you know, the race car and so forth. So
yeah.
Hopefully Bob is able to come up with something creative that kind of sticks with the HPC motif and you know, gives us a nice introduction. So with that, here's okay. Your tip of the week. And we're back. All right. So Wenming's got this week's tip of the week.
All right. I got a really nice tip for people who don't necessarily want to use the job scheduler in a Visual Studio setting.
Yep.
The reason is because we have, you know, Fortran users. We got people yeah. who don't necessarily want to do this, especially IT pro guys.
Yeah.
IT pro guys, you know, getting them to open a Visual Studio console is a little difficult.
Yep.
So I actually put out a blog last night. So here's my blog, and it actually talks about a lot of interesting things regarding weather simulations and running, you know, molecular dynamics and interesting things like that. But it also gives you a background education on mathematics behind HPC.
I should read that.
You go all the way down, all the way down. There's, you know, all the
HPC math attacks.
Yeah,
cool.
Exactly.
Well, we'll definitely point
so all that
to your
cool
blog.
Stuff. But today, our tip of the week is going to be deploying HPC cluster using just PowerShell.
Yep.
And that's something that somebody at the test team, James Papania, and I decided that PowerShell is a great way of deploying something when you just want to press enter
yep.
With the default values.
Yeah.
So.
We've had Michael Washam on the show
exactly,
talking
yeah.
about the Windows Azure platform. PowerShell commandlets, and so this sounds very similar.
Actually, don't tell him that, but we actually used that.
No, good.
So that's actually part of it. So we modified his. We're using his commandlets,
yep.
and we are also, you know, modifying the script to add the HPC part of it. So the cool thing about this is that now you would be able to just, you know, run a little script, and all
right.
you have to do, and I have it on linked at the end of the blog. So what you're doing is running it and run the script, set
yep.
up your account,
yep.
Very easy, and then, you know, select your management certificate, very, very easy, and then your hosted services, obviously. It's mm-hmm. very much how we would do it,
yeah.
even using a UI.
So it looks like there's a script, you walk through it, it's
yep.
got some options, you choose
exactly.
what you want to do, and
yeah.
it takes care of it for you.
Exactly. You even know exactly how HPC works. Now here's a database you have to
yep.
select, right?
Yep.
So it uses a database in the back end. And then, you know, there's your HPC admin password. And see, it's actually telling you what it's doing. So it
yep.
initializes
nice.
The SQL DB. And in a very quick walkthrough, you can simply figure out how the whole thing works.
Yep, that's cool.
And your deployment is ready when it finishes. It sets up the database, sets up, you know, your portal, and everything is done.
Cool.
And I didn't really have to type a lot of words. As you can see, you know, anywhere I typed, it was just 0, 3, 1.
Yep.
And when we're done, we have a deployment. And
that's
we're going to look at, you know, how to install applications, which is also three commands, HPC pack, packet, HPC upload the code to the blob storage, and HPC sync, so that
yep.
every single node on your deployment has a copy of the simulation.
That's cool.
Code.
So it's awesome.
And you can pretty much run anything you want. It doesn't have to be simulation. It could be.
Look at that. You've
anything,
even already.
Yeah.
You've even already got someone commenting saying this is
oh.
great. Thanks.
Oh, okay.
So.
Great.
So.
All right.
There you go. Yep. The sysadmin doesn't like to use Visual Studio. So
yeah.
So great tip. So basically, you know, here's a script that you can use to deploy out all the assets that you need to Windows Azure without
yep.
having to use Visual Studio.
Yep.
Which,
so.
I don't know, I don't quite understand. I love Visual Studio.
I love Visual Studio too, but you know, it's
yep.
for people who are IT pro and
yep.
who are, you know,
yep.
not familiar with our platform.
Yep, that's great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me onto the show.
So if you want to reach us at all and, comment on the show, ask us some questions or come up with any ideas, you can reach us on Twitter at Cloud Cover Show. I believe, Wenming, you are on Twitter as well.
Yes, I just got back on.
You got back on. I think your last tweet was a year and a half ago, right?
That's right. So. And it said, I haven't been on Twitter for a year. So that has been like 2.5 years, but I did tweet today.
Yes, yeah. So what's your Twitter?
Wenming Yi. So it's WenMingYe.
Nice. Well, we're gonna put it right here so people will be able to get access to it. So.
Great. Thank you so much, Wade.
Yep, thank you. And thanks for joining us.